This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is a podcast that I've been very much looking forward to because today we're going to explore a treatment modality that has great promise that is something we haven't discussed. Maybe we've touched upon it briefly, but we're going to devote an entire broadcast to this. I think this is a breakthrough treatment modality. It's something I've been using with patients for well over a decade or more. This is a therapy which is gaining increased interest, research, and application in the field of, I will call it innovative medicine, not just integrative medicine, because it also extends to mainstream medicine. The therapy is something called LDN, low-dose naltrexone. And today we're going to talk to an expert. She's Linda Elsiegood. Linda comes to us from England, where she resides. And she is the founder of the LDN Research Trust, a UK charity which operates globally. And she herself has experience with LDN because, according to her, and we'll have her share her story with you, she feels that LDN gave her her life back. So without further ado, here's Linda Elsiegood. How are you, Linda?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's my pleasure. So give us a little background on how you got interested in low-dose naltrexone.
Okay. It was back in October 2003, and I was told by my neurologist, he just examined me, I'd been having relapses every 6 months. I was diagnosed in August 2000. And every time I had a relapse...
Of multiple sclerosis.
Right. I would lose different functions. And I would, after a few months, start to get a little bit better. And then, wham, I had the next relapse. And I'd go downhill a little bit further, start to come back up. If you look at it as a ladder, I would drop six rungs, I would climb two, and then I'd drop another six. So it wasn't good news. But by October 2003, my neurologist examined me, and he sat me down. He sat opposite the desk. He put his hand out, shook my hand, stood up, went and opened the door. And while he was doing this, he was talking, saying, "I'm really sorry, you're secondary progressive now, and there's nothing more we can do."
Wow. That's grim prognosis for you.
Exactly. And I said to my husband in the car, you know, I felt as though he was saying, "Go home, die quietly, don't make a fuss, you're an embarrassment." That's how I felt. You know, no plan B, nothing.
Right.
And at that time, just let me describe what I had to live with on a daily basis.
Sure.
We'll start at the top, my head. Cognitively, it was as though English was my second language. I couldn't recall vocabulary. I'd got no memory of events, things. As I say, vocabulary had gone. So I could probably call a cat, a dog, a door, a window. But I was thinking while I was processing it that I was saying it correctly. So my husband thought he was helping me by correcting me every time I said something. And it was very depressing because every time I opened my mouth, he was saying, "Oh, don't you mean?" And if you know what I mean, please don't correct me. "Well, if I correct you, you'll remember next time." Well, no, it doesn't work like that. I had double vision. I lost the hearing in my left ear. When they were trying to diagnose me, my neurologist didn't think that loss of hearing was anything to do with MS, and he's since written a paper about that.
So. It's an unusual manifestation of MS, but it's not unheard of.
No, and it was completely deaf. Wow. They did these evoke potential tests. It showed nothing, no recording at all, and they did it 3 times to check. I had bad vertigo. I also had no balance, so I tripped and fell and stumbled. And people with MS will understand what I mean by furniture walking, you know, and holding on to walls and so on. So outside of the house, I had
sort of like walking through a cruise ship during a storm.
Oh, yeah, exactly that. And it felt like that too, you know, because you've got no balance and vertigo. You do feel as though you're on a ship. So that's a pretty good way of describing it. And I also had no bowel or bladder control. And that was very upsetting. I can remember, you know, trying to go to the toilet and I'd probably fall over and wet myself, or I'd make it to the toilet but wet myself before I'd pulled my trousers down. And I can remember thinking, you know, a 2-year-old can do this. You know, why can't I do it? You know, I'm trying hard here and I can't. And as far as my bowels were concerned, and I'll go into details because it was so horrifying for me. When you sneeze, you get a warning that, you know, chew. Well, that was what my bowels were like. I would know I was going to go and it would just explode.
Yeah, and commonly explode. Referred to, the delicate term for that is incontinence. But, you know, so many people suffer from that, especially with neurological disorders.
But it's so degrading.
Yeah.
So very, very degrading.
It's the ultimate regression and the ultimate loss of control.
And you don't want to go out. It happened every day. And if it happened at 10 o'clock every morning, how wonderful would that have been? But it could happen in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. So you couldn't plan on going out knowing you were going to be safe, because there was never a safe time. Anyway, so, and restless legs. Oh my goodness. I'd never experienced anything like your legs thrashing. You knew they were moving, but to try and stop them, you couldn't. All the hairs on my legs were rubbed off because I would just thrash around so much. And then twitching muscles, different muscles would twitch. And I can remember my thumb on my right hand moving backwards and forwards and up and down. And I used to try and go to sleep because that really did disturb me, holding my fingers over my thumb, and my thumb still moving, you know. I couldn't stop it. So I couldn't hear, I couldn't see, I couldn't think, I couldn't stand. I had no bowel and bladder control. And these restless legs and pain. I had burning limbs. Now, I justified different things, and it wasn't until one doctor said to me, when you're talking about really bad pins and needles, don't you call that pain? And I was saying, well, no, I call that pins and needles. How foolish. Yeah, exactly. And then I would have my legs used to feel as though they were very bad sunburn and they were burning. They were on fire. But if you touched them, they were actually cold. But I didn't call that pain either. I called that burning. But the pain that I did have was in my head. I used to have pains. And this was another thing. You'd explain to doctors about the pains in your head, and you'd get looks as though they didn't believe you, because sometimes it would be on the right front, the back left, it would move. But it was the size of, say, the top of a standard wine glass, in that size. And it was worse than toothache. It was so bad. But then next day, as I say, it would move. It was a trade-off. I could have very strong painkillers, and I can't remember what they were now. And they would deaden the pain to an extent where it was bearable. But the trade-off was nausea, such bad nausea. You then couldn't move because you thought, you know, you were going to vomit any minute. So that was the trade-off. And this was the point I was at when I was told nothing more could be done. And it, wow, you know. You mean I'm just going to get worse from here? And it was just unbelievable. But my doctor came out to me and I'd run out of painkillers, and I'd phoned the surgery, and he came himself and brought me a new bottle of painkillers and fetched me some water. I was in bed. I must have had the door open, and he let himself in. And I said to him, you know, how long do you think it will be before I start to feel better? And he said to me, I think if you were going to, you would have done by now. And after he'd gone, I thought, I can't live like this anymore. It's too upsetting for me, degrading, and I'm not living every day. Just, it was like watching one of those calendars where the days flick over, but mm-hmm. I wasn't actually
like
living
old movies,
or doing
yeah.
anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, another day is gone, another day. It's only by, you know, bedtime. The only thing I could achieve was somebody helping me have a shower. Oh, and I was choking on food and being slapped on the back. Often couldn't find my mouth, so people had to feed me. And everybody, the looks in their eyes, you know, they were sorry. They didn't know what to do. My parents were saying, if it was only us instead of you, we would, you know, take it from you. So I thought, you know, if I took all the painkillers and ended it, everybody would know why, they would understand. Then they could get on with their lives rather than have to look after me and feel guilty and sorry, and which I didn't need either. And then I realised it would be my 15-year-old daughter that would find me. How could I do that to her?
Well,
you know?
Thank goodness euthanasia is not a policy of National Institute of Health or whatever it is that they have over there.
Yes.
So you were spared, you're plagued with ended thoughts. But so how did you mm-hmm. become aware of something which was kind of an off-the-trail option, which is low-dose naltrexone?
Well, once I decided that ending it all wasn't an option, the only other option was to fight it, to prove everybody wrong. And I was always on the toilet, and I would manage to sit at the computer only 10 minutes at a time, and that was as much as I could do. And I knew I wasn't unique, that there must be people out there with MS who were using something. And I managed to find LDN, low-dose naltrexone, and the people that were taking it that I found were in America, and many of them were kind enough to let me phone them, and I spoke to them. And everybody said the same: if it doesn't do you any good, it's not going to do you any harm.
Right.
So I then had to try and find the information. I found a private doctor who gave me all the information to take to my own doctor. By this time, the doctor that I had previously seen had retired, and I had a nice new young doctor. And she asked the partners in the practice if they would prescribe, and they said no. But she said if I got a private prescription, she'd be happy to monitor me. So I got the private prescription, and people were saying, you can get introductory side effects. You can have headaches. You can have sleep disturbance or upset stomach. I had nothing. And I can't tell you, I wanted side effects. I wanted to know it was doing something for me.
Right.
I was devastated. I could have been taking aspirin.
It was like
nothing.
Water. Right.
It was. And I was really, really disappointed. But after 3 weeks, oh my goodness. Suddenly, you know, having lived in my head, which was like a television set not tuned in, I could suddenly see. I could think, I could hear, I could process thoughts. Wow, it was amazing. And then slowly, okay, I was in a wheelchair, and how people who have been in, I was in a wheelchair 18 months, how people can say they've been in a wheelchair for 18 months, get up and walk, I really don't know, because I had problems learning to walk because my tendons had shrunk. It pulled up at the bottom of my feet. So I had to have physiotherapy, and it was very painful, but I managed to get out of the wheelchair walking. Took 18 months really, but it was like, wow, really, you know, even if that was all it had done for me would have been fantastic. I would say I still have fatigue. I still know I have MS, but the burning limbs, twitching muscles, restless legs, hearing, bowel and bladder problems, they have all gone.
And you've managed to be extraordinarily productive because you founded the LDN Research Trust. You've been a real mover and shaker in expanding LDN awareness. And recently, you've edited a book, a newly available book, the LDN book, How a Little-Known Generic Drug, Low-Dose Naltrexone, Could Revolutionize Treatment for Autoimmune Diseases, Cancer, Autism, Depression, and More, edited by you, Linda Elsiegood. So is the book out? Because I received a proof of the book. Has it been released yet?
The book has been released in the US. We're still waiting for it in the UK. It's due to be available on the 26th of March, so imminently.
Great.
I was asked by Margot Baldwin, the head of Chelsea Green Publishing, if I would write a book. Now, one of the doctors has been saying for years I should write a book. I had no idea what it involved, and if I had have done, I probably would have said no. It takes more doing than I realised. But after I'd agreed to do the book, the main thing was to sit down. I'm a list person. I enjoy lists. And I thought, what would I have liked to have seen when I was really ill in a book, if all that information would, you know, put together? So it's my version of an LDN Bible, if you like, where you've got the first chapter all about the history and the pharmacology of naltrexone, how naltrexone came around, how it works, the dual mechanism of the endorphins and the toll-like receptors. It's very, very informative, tells you virtually everything you need to know in that alone. And then we cover different conditions, which is amazing. And also how to start a conversation with your practitioner to get LDN prescribed in a very clear, concise way, so you can offer them the information that they would like in a format that
and get them
they
to be,
would accept.
Get them to be on your side, because many mainstream physicians are either unfamiliar with LDN or they don't want to prescribe it because it is what is called a compounded medication. It's a legal medication in a high dose form. That's high dose naltrexone. But low dose naltrexone is about, what, 1/20th the amount that you get when you prescribe naltrexone, the high dose form. Has to be specially compounded by a compounding pharmacy, and many doctors say, "Well, I don't know about this. This is off my beaten track. I'm not sure I should be prescribing this." They're fearful. They're ignorant. So you have to kind of bring up their awareness. And fortunately for you, you had a physician who said, "Look, I don't know much about this, but hey, on a compassionate basis, I'll prescribe it. It sounds like it's probably fairly safe. Let's give it a shot." And it worked for you.
It did work for me. And this is why I founded the LDN Research Trust. Did I want to say, once I felt well again, okay, I'm fine. You know, thank you very much. I'll just get on with my life. Or do I help those people who are in the same position that I was in, who probably wouldn't have found LDN on their own if they were in a worse place than me? You know, not to be able to get up to do the research on the computer. So it was for all of those people. I wanted to get the word out about LDN. I wasn't saying it was a miracle drug or a cure or that it would work for everyone. I just wanted people to be aware of LDN, that it was there. It was an option. They could actually research it themselves.
So, Linda, can you give us a brief definition of what is LDN, low-dose naltrexone?
LDN has a dual mechanism. It's an opiate blocker. So your body makes its own endorphins. And when it blocks the receptors, your body thinks that you've got no endorphins in your body at all. So it increases the number of endorphins that it makes. And it also works on toll-like receptors, which work on the inflammation of the body.
And so by virtue of that mechanism of action, it can be helpful in a wide variety of conditions, because it's almost one of those too good to be true kinds of things. It seems to be helpful in so many conditions. It's been used in chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, cancer, inflammatory bowel disease, MS, lupus, depression. And I found it helpful for sometimes skin problems like psoriasis, autoimmune problems like thyroiditis, and rheumatoid arthritis as well. So it's by virtue of this sort of universal mode of action that it seems to help turn down the volume on inflammatory processes or autoimmune processes in the body.
That's right. If any condition has an autoimmune component, LDN could possibly help. We know that there are over 200 conditions now where LDN has been used. As you were saying about skin conditions, and you could add alopecia to that, and autism. We just had the LDN 2016 conference where the book was launched a month ago. And at the end of the auction, at the end of the conference, we had a little boy called Jacob, who's a piano protege, also an LDN user for autism, and he was 8 years old, and he could play Bach, Beethoven, Schubert without music. I mean, absolutely unbelievable what this little boy can do. And you would not know he had autism at all, and he had it quite badly.
So he has the savant properties of Asperger's, but his social interaction problems, his other problems, have been minimized by use of LDN.
That's right, yes. And his mum tells a lovely story where after he'd been on LDN, he was a little boy that wouldn't let you hug him, hold him, no affection whatsoever. He was in his own little world, and it was only a few days after being on LDN. It's quite quickly. And his mum was trying to hug him, and he hugged her back, and he said, "I love you, mummy," or mommy, you know, American. And she called her husband and said, "Luna, quickly, you know, get the camera, video this. I will say it again, just in case he will repeat it." And he said it again. And she was quite upset, but she thought, "I've got it. Because he may never, ever in his life say it again, but I've got it. You know, I've got
at least
recording."
to show the potential. But then it was onwards and upwards for him as he continued to use the LDN. That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. All right, so beautiful. You've laid the groundwork for our discussion, a more broad discussion of LDN and its application to a variety of medical conditions. As our listeners know, we divide these podcasts into two parts. In part two, we'll talk about LDN for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. We'll talk about it in relation to MS, lupus, fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. There's some very promising research there, as well as some intriguing research on cancer and other medical conditions. And we'll talk a little bit about how to take it, what are potential side effects or issues with taking it, and continue our fascinating discussion with Linda Elsegood. She's the editor of a new book, the LDN book, and she's also a founder of the LDN Research Trust. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.